Yesterday, Vincent, I think you were representing some of the ideas from the friends from Taiwan, and you mentioned that people have the idea of calming down by focusing on breath, and someone mentioned about, well, I'm not sure if it was you or Ian, but someone mentioned about focusing on breath and breath almost stopping and slowing down and being quieter. Was that you or Ian or someone mentioned about Vincent? Yeah. Would you like to bring it up a little bit more, because maybe it's useful for everyone, about the what you consider the benefits, or what they consider as the benefits of focusing on breath?
Okay. The background was, when I walked in, Ian was sharing about the benefit he got from the practice. So I also share the benefit. I understand what he was saying about a benefit, because many students in the meditation center have that similar benefit. But just it took me a while, a long time, to realize the so-called increased awareness is not really the sati that Buddha was teaching. It's more like just thinking. So that's why I mentioned about some of the experience commonly in the meditation center, including some health benefit. So to me, the difficult question for me to answer, if people ask me, is they usually talk about the Anapanasati section in the Mahasatipatthana Sutra. They usually take it as instructions. But we had some discussion this morning already. That's difficult for me to answer people's question, because they consider that instructions. And people tend to say they feel quiet after they have that kind of practice for a few days. They feel quiet, and then they take it as calmness.
So what's the best moment in this life?
Understanding reality is the very best moment. Well, one can mislead oneself so much. A moment of quiet, one is not sure what is quiet or what is quiet, which is with the kusala citta. So they say it's like yoga. They consider it like yoga, but they think it's the benefit of meditation. They're not sure at all what is what. And one gets so confused. And that's why it's so important to know about what is real. All the different paramatta dhammas, the nama and the rupa as a foundation knowledge, so as pariyatti, the real foundation knowledge. But it starts, I just talked to Alan about it, and it starts very little, maybe many lives, and then it gets very slowly a bit firmer, and then there will be more confidence when it is real firm. And only then it can condition. Well, Kichayana Ajahn explained so well about Satchanyana, Kichayana, and Katanyana. Kichayana is already Satipatthana, or a beginning of direct understanding. And Katanyana realizes the truth. So that is real step by step, but we should not underestimate even a beginning of pariyatti.
Even people have hard time, have difficulty to tell, it's not thinking or awareness. People already have, you know, not easy to really distinguish that already. Yeah. I mean, I cannot really say, okay, you don't have sati. No way you have that. They claim they have that.
They think.
Right, I think they have that. Right.
You said that it's difficult to explain to people that the Anapanasati section in the Mahasatipatthana Sutta is not an instruction. I think one of the problems is that people only read as far as that part of the sutta, and they don't go on to read the rest of the sutta, because, as we were discussing earlier, it's apparent from reading the following sections that the Buddha is not giving an instruction. He is giving a description. And then if one looks in the section on citta, for example, it says that the bhikkhu knows mind with lobha as mind with loba, and mind with dosa as mind with dosa. That is, again, just a description of the person whose awareness is already well developed. The reason it's difficult is, for one thing, people have a strong view, wrong view, about what the practice is. And secondly, they just focus on a particular little part of the sutta without reading it all. So perhaps in that situation, it's possible to discuss other parts of the same sutta to make the point.
You said something that many people don't have the opportunity to read the text. Or my friend speaking, that many people don't get the opportunity or cannot even read the suttas or the text. And then it's really difficult.
If they attend a meditation center or anything and are told the wrong thing and they don't make their own inquiry, then of course they're going to believe it. And maybe they believe what they're told by the meditation instructor rather than what they hear from you or me. That's the nature of things, isn't it?
And also, as we discussed earlier, it comes back to now. So now, is breath appearing? That's a question. Or is it specially trying to focus on breath in order to be quiet, in order to slow down? Actually, citta doesn't slow down. And what we take for quiet or calm or pleasant feeling is actually the attachment that would like to focus on that particular object. Because now, naturally in daily life, what appears now is visible object, sound, seeing, hardness. These are the common objects. So if there is an idea of focusing on another object like breath, which doesn't commonly appear, who would like to focus and what for is the question.
Jonathan, I'm wondering if some people might conclude, they've read the full sutta, they might still think that, the Buddha expects his audience to understand lopa, citta with lopa and other kusala at other times. But the section on the breath and anapanasati is itself a training, so that the other moments, if they arise, will be more likely to happen. No, I'm just saying that you're saying that people read only that section. Mm-hmm. But even if they read the other sections, they could,
they could still misunderstand it.
Right.
Yes, of course.
There are all sorts of readings of the Satipatthana Sutta. Some people say, well, it's got to be practiced in order. So you start with the Anapanasati section in the body and then you move on through the rest of the sutta. All sorts of weird ideas, but no one can't say that it'll be properly understood. It takes understanding to read the sutta properly in the first place.
Right. I think it takes a moment of understanding realities now to know.
As Sarah said, it comes back to the present moment. Yeah. And what's the understanding of the present moment?
So sometimes we just argue in vain, with people who...
I thought you were going to suggest that we should prepare a meditator's guide to the Satipatthana Sutta.
What's the purpose of what everyone reads about? Satipatthana or Anapanasati? What's the purpose? One reads about the breath and Satipatthana, what is the purpose of reading it?
Ajahn, some people read anything that the Buddha taught. Mm-hmm. So it's not just particularly Satipatthana Sutta.
But we are talking about breath, right? So what's the purpose of reading about it?
The only purpose of reading about it or any sutta is to understand more about reality now, otherwise... There's no
I don't
benefit.
Think so, because when you are thinking about reading the Anapanasati, you just want to follow.
Yes, that's what I'm trying
that's
to say.
That's the wrong purpose. Yeah. But the right purpose of reading any sutta or anything the Buddhas teach is to understand more about life at this moment. But if one just selects that particular sutta, it's because one just wants to focus or just wants some quick method, but not understanding about reality at all.
And a lot of these people, if you ask them, they'll say, you don't need to read much, you just need a handful of sutras.
So what's the purpose of doing whatever you do or anyone does? What's the purpose of doing so? Not to understand the words of the Buddha at all. Just want to follow the book. But there is this very moment which is taught by the Buddha. Can it be known as what he said for 45 years about this moment? Because the purpose of the reading or listening to the words of the Buddha is just to have the understanding which haven't been before at all. For example, now we talk about breath and we talk about many things. What about this moment of thinking or talking about it? Is there any reality at all? So we forget about reality right now, but we think about lots of breath and so on in this sutta or that sutta, different words. So I think that the best thing is to understand each word little by little, to know reality at this moment, that it is accordance with the teachings of the Buddha. So the words of the Buddha is not just to do, but to understand this moment.
Rajan, would you understand that the way Buddha's teachings is, taught, and what comes in the name of Buddhist practice, it's understandable that people would think that Buddha taught meditation and this is the way to understand his teachings, because everyone's looking for a method, a shortcut. So it's hard to make those people realize that that's not the purpose of the Buddha's teachings. Because one thing, that everyone has attachment and everyone wants results. And also most people who come across as being the authorities in Buddhism, they all teach meditation. So that's what everyone is exposed to.
But what does one get from hearing and listening and reading to those words? Even right now, see, what's the result? Or what does one get from talking for hours about what? So I think that there should be understanding of each word deeper and deeper, more profound, in order to understand it.
And for those who appreciate what you're just saying, we don't mind which sutta.
Right. For example, if we talk about breath, what is it? One should begin with what is it before going on further. Otherwise, one talk just about that, one has no idea about it correctly. So what is breath? Is there breath? What can we know about breath?
If we're talking about the reality, we're talking about a rupa, which is conditioned by citta, which usually doesn't appear, because what we take for being breath when taking a deep breath, or this is an idea about breath, not the reality, which is very subtle, the motion or the hardness, which is conditioned by citta, which usually is not known and doesn't appear, and which arises in a group with other rupas. But if we're talking about development of calm, we're talking about a concept of breath, and we're talking about the reflecting very wisely about that concept of breath as a condition for calm. But there has to be understanding of what calm is and how that object conditions calm, and not by wishing to have it or trying to have it.
That is far away from breath. Because it
doesn't usually appear.
Breath. So no matter when and where and what, whether it appears to be object of understanding or studying in order to understanding it. For example, if we talk just one word, breath, is it real? Is there breath? There is breath at the moment of thinking about it, but not the actual breath, the real one which appears, or maybe it does not appear at all in a day, right? So the other thing appears. Shouldn't we talk about it or understand it as it is, rather than thinking about breath and try very much to understand it without no foundation of understanding reality at all as not self?
Especially if we have heard and understood that breath ultimately is hardness, softness, heat, cold, motion, pressure. Why ignore the hardness?
Yeah, no. But it's not just as one has read, but at moment when it appears. So the characteristic of breath is there to be known as a reality. Otherwise, we think a lot about breath, but no understanding of the characteristic which appears as it is. Like, what is it? Is there anything or any moment of experiencing it? Is it I who is aware of breath? But actually, there is no awareness. It's only thinking of being aware, but not the actual awareness at all. Because we read about awareness and we think that it's as easy as pie or whatever, that it can arise at any time that you want to have it. But actually, that is not at all. There must be the beginning of understanding reality as not self, no matter what is it. For example, when we read in Tipitaka about seeing, it's not just going on, seeing so on and on and on, but at this moment of seeing, is that Buddha enlightened the truth of it? So by understanding this point, there is no neglection of seeing at this moment, but begin to understand that that is what Buddha enlightened. And the truth of it is that it's no one at all. But there is seeing right now, so what is there? That which is seen for sure, but nobody understands it as it is at all. But if someone is seen taking something out of visible object, and visible object cannot be anyone at all, see? But the idea of having it, people and things, from seeing, is right or wrong, because actually, close your eyes, no one there at all. So there cannot be anyone out of visible object at all. No one. So in order to really understand moment of seeing as it is, it is the moment of understanding the truth of it, the truth of what is seen as it's just a reality which can be seen. And it is seen only by seeing. At the moment, hearing, thinking, is not moment of seeing at all. So it's just moment which is conditioned to appear as that which is seen, because there is a reality which can experience it. And we call it, or make it known as, seeing. And there is no understanding of seeing as just a moment of conditioned reality arising by conditions. Without its proper conditions, it cannot arise at all. But now it arises, so there must be conditions for its arising for sure, to just arise to see, that's all, and then gone completely. Completely, see, even just this word, absolutely, completely, is not enough to know that there is nothing, there is something left at all. Actually, there's nothing. Before seeing, there's no seeing. See? The citta before seeing cannot see. But it conditioned the moment of seeing. One condition is the previous citta conditioned seeing to arise just in a moment and then falls away in split seconds. No one can know that without the teachings of the Buddha, who had enlightened the truth. So each of his words is vajja satya, the words of truth. Never change at all. So it begins to understand that what is seen is only that which is seen. Even it is intellectual understanding, but it will condition moment of direct awareness and understanding it now. Because no one can have the awareness of seeing and visible object right now by just intention to have it, try to have it, sit for hours to have it. But it's impossible because it has to be conditioned by the intellectual understanding from years and years and years of life to life in order to really understand it as no one at all. So we need the right words to develop right understanding. So the precious moment in life is the understanding of the truth of whatever is there. Not just only breath, trying to be aware of breath, wanting to understand breath. Who is there? I am sitting or keeping on thinking or thinking that one is aware of breath. But actually, no condition for understanding of breath and right awareness of breath to arise without the intellectual understanding from moment to moment. So whatever appears should be object of talking about and understanding it as it is. Like visible object is not that which experience it. Even that which experiences now, that which is seen, is hard to know.
And basically, if there's no understanding now of what is seen, visible object, or seeing, there's no chance of understanding the object that doesn't commonly appear like breath. So just takes one away from understanding what appears now in daily life.
And also, we can see that trying to understand seeing a visible object is lopa. Therefore, something that does not even part of our daily life must surely be lopa, like breath.
So, should there be the meditation center? What for? Is that the teachings of the Buddha? No meditation center in the Buddha's time at all. Never. When it's right understanding, it can be any time. And not from one's own thinking that I will sit so that I can know, but actually it has to be hearing, considering, until the right understanding of whatever is there now can be understood as they are as that which is seen and the seeing. They are different realities, both are not self. No one is there at all. No one at that which is seen, and no one which sees.
That seems a very scary moment because we are very attached to family, friends, cars, everything around us. And
excuse
then to lose
me?
It...
Scary to what?
Sorry?
Scary to what?
At the moment, I can understand that the moment, I can understand intellectually, at the moment of understanding is not scary. But immediately afterwards, there must, because we're losing all of those things around us. So do we immediately after that moment perhaps feel a bit frightened?
Yeah, but what's the truth?
Yes, it's not someone.
The truth is the truth.
Mm-hmm. The aversion has arisen by conditions and can be known.
Be happy to know the truth. It's so true.
And understanding the truth is not scary.
No, there's no one there.
And because when it is understanding, it's not...
No.
Nothing scary.
About it is a bit scary.
Just imagining what it is like or something, or thinking about
just thinking
this.
Thinking about it is a little bit scary because we have our daily life, and we have a job and a family and all our possessions, and then suddenly we're going to lose all of that.
But are we not now living to understand the truth?
For sure, yeah.
Just like now, actually, even now, there is no friend, no car, no house, just seeing visible object that's seen, thinking, hearing. It's not, why is that scary? So when there is more understanding of how it is now, it's like letting go of the burden of all the wrong understanding and attachment. So it's not like it's anything different from how it is now. Life goes on as usual. You still drive in your car and you go to your house and whatever. But understanding that in reality, no car, no house, nothing that belongs to one. But it's not anything different from daily life at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, one cannot understand the Buddha's virtues at all. So the path leading to enlightenment must be the path of detachment from the very beginning to the end.
Because it's not you trying to detach from all your friends and the people you love, but only the function of paññā. So it starts very little, very gradual, and more detachment later when paññā is stronger.
And what is scare?
The idea of self is so strong.
It's a reality, not you.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we're not expected to be without attachment, right? I mean, only an arahata is without attachment. And intellectual understanding is not going to make much difference in terms of that. But we can understand the benefit of understanding versus going on without understanding.
And truthfulness is one of parami, of the 10 parami. To be true, be truthful. Mm-hmm. To the truth.
Everyone needs the paramis as a support of paññā. Otherwise, it's impossible to be detached little by little.
And courage, I think we've mentioned about, Jan has mentioned about having courage as well to follow.
It's
and
there.
Patience.
It's there now, each moment of developing understanding.
Mm-hmm. It's like if there is a little understanding now, understanding of visible object or sound now, then actually virya is there, patience is there, that moment. We don't need to think about developing virya or developing patience. It's there at that moment of understanding. And at that moment of understanding of what is seen now, it's not scary at all, because at that moment the citta is calm for that moment. Mm-hmm. And there is understanding and kusala, nothing, no thinking about anything fearful or lost or anything. Otherwise, it's like imagining again what it would be like at vipassana jnana or this or that, but it's not actually understanding what appears now. And as Nina said, just letting understanding develop gradually. But it has to begin. As she said, there has to be the pariyati until it's firm, the satya jnana, leading to Kichanyana development of Satipatthana, which leads to direct insight. But it has to develop now. So at this moment of understanding, at whatever level, there is detachment, nothing scary at that moment.
At some point, I guess being scared could be a reminder about the danger of attachment and ignorance.
Without attachment, can there be a moment of being scared?
No.
So at that moment, it's conditioned.
If we talk about the world, I can understand that we're talking about this moment, that sometimes the world of taste is born, that out of the blue there becomes taste, or out of the blue there becomes coldness, or out of the blue there becomes sound. But seeing seems to be there all the time, but when you have your eyes open. But it's the same, seeing must be born. It's not permanent, is it? But seeing seems to be more difficult to have some grasp of than, say, these other realities, which come and go all the time. But seeing is there permanent now, the seeing now, but there's not this idea of it coming and going, whereas there is with, say, coldness.
So two things.
I've thought about what you're talking about too, about how when it comes to hearing, we can understand that hearing arises because of the sound, right? But seeing doesn't seem to arise at any point. It's like there already, right? But I guess that's the purpose of hearing the teachings. We can sometimes refer to hearing and know that seeing must be the same. And also a reminder about how much ignorance there is. And also what we take for the arising and falling of hearing may not really be the arising and falling of hearing, and just another story about it.
And it gives an idea of how much attachment there is to seeing, how much attachment there is to what is seen, because seeing is so common, it arises so frequently, even now, and there's so much attachment immediately after seeing. So it seems that the light, the visible object, covers up the mind door, and it seems they're seeing all the time. But Sukhin said that's because of ignorance and attachment, not understanding anything. Actually, a moment of seeing arises so briefly and falls away, and at that moment of seeing, the object is light, the world is light at that moment, but immediately afterwards, when the thinking about seeing, when other realities arise, they arise in darkness. So only at the moment that visible object is seen is there light.
So everything comes and goes out of the blue or by conditions?
The same, because
Not the same.
Out of the blue means that it arises by conditions, by it just from nowhere there comes sound by conditions, and then it's gone, and then from nowhere comes taste by conditions, and then it's gone, and from nowhere comes seeing by conditions, and then it's gone, except for I've got no idea of how that with seeing, it seems much more difficult. But I understand that's where we're going, that it has to come to that point where seeing, there's nothing at all, and then the seeing, and then it's gone, by conditions, seeing by conditions.
So out of the blue, by conditions.
Yes. Out of the blue is another way of saying unexpected guest.
Mm-hmm. But it makes it sound like it's for no reason or by no cause.
Okay,
but I know
wrong.
You...
Yes. It's unexpected, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And that contains the right path, in the sense that we're not trying, there's no trying to be aware, but it is by itself, there is awareness of that moment by conditions, and then it's gone. So out of the blue or unexpected guest, I think, is helpful to understand that the right path is by conditions, not by a self-trying. Yeah.
making it.
It's the unexpected. I find that word very important, the unexpected guest, because it is so different from this idea of going to a place and trying. It's there by conditions, and those conditions are having understood some of the words of the Buddha.
But there's also the understanding that so long as we're not arahatas and the parinibbana has not been attained, life will continue. Mm-hmm. There will be conditions for...
Whenever there is the idea of going somewhere to do something, one forgets that it has to be understanding whatever appears now. Otherwise, it cannot be any understanding at all. Because if it cannot be understood right now, it's impossible to have the understanding of whatever appears anywhere else. So it has to be right now. So there's no way to get away from understanding the reality right now.
So we know that other moments is dark, like hearing happens in darkness, and tasting, so on. Only at the moment of seeing is light. So at the moment of seeing darkness, is it light or is it dark?
Light. If you're seeing at the moment of seeing,
yes,
then it's always light.
But if one gets up in the middle of the night when it's mm-hmm. dark and no light appears, then it's not light at that moment. Shapes don't appear, mm-hmm. no colours appear because there is no light at that moment, even though a visible object is seen. So when we say it's light at the moment of seeing, it's light now, this moment. The visible object is light. But okay. In pitch black, there is seeing of visible object, but there's no light at that moment.
And when we are, for example, in the nighttime, when we have the light on, we can see shapes and everything, and then we turn off the light, so the first few seconds, only darkness is seen, and then after a while, we start seeing just something. What is the difference between the two moments? Because it's still the same conditions, but at one moment just darkness is seen, and the other moment the visible object appear differently.
No matter what you think about darkness or visible object, whatever is seen is object of seeing.
And at those moments, visible object is not the same. Visible object is never the same. Mm-hmm. So one moment and then another moment, it's not the same visible object. And it's not the same thinking with different memory also. And sometimes a little light appears and sometimes no light. So we cannot say it's the same visible object.
And no matter how much or what level, what degree of dark is seen, it's not as dark as citta.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as dark as citta. No light at all.
The darkness which Achan refers to is not the darkness of nighttime darkness.
Even when it seems very dark, there can still be a little light there, so a little making out of shape and form. And
the experiencing is darker.
Do you want to bring up your point you raised this morning about the skills, the thief's skills and the akusala skills and the scientific skills and skills that you mentioned that it seemed the Buddha praised? And
One of the greatest blessings was that the Buddha praised skill in arts or skills in science.
Avijja and lobha. It's not skill in kusala. And
yes,
understanding.
The skill is in skusa. So I was wondering whether the skill... So as I understand it, there's some suttas where the thief is praised not because he's stealing, but that was dispraised, but the thief is praised because of his skill at thieving. So that this idea that skill is different from the
understanding is more skillful.
Yes, understanding is more skillful, but there is conventional skill which can accompany kusala or akusala citta.
We talk a lot, but we would say whatever words that one has no understanding at all, like skill of the thief.
Yes.
Akusala.
Yes. So skill really is skilled states of mind, which is kusala.
But kusala is more skillful.
Than akusala. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But akusala can still be skillful in a conventional sense. If we're good, if we've got a good job and we are skilled at drawing.
It's not as skilled as kusala.
No. But why is it of benefit then if it's akusala?
No matter how much it goes on.
But why is it, if it's a benefit though? He said it's a benefit. We know it's a benefit to have kusala, but it's a benefit to be good at science or arts or graphics.
It can be applied in wholesome way.
Yes, okay. It just seems to me that was just saying it's good to have a good job or something, really. I mean, but it really boils down to kusala.
Like if there was no skill in speaking, we couldn't have this discussion. So at the moments of kusala, it is a good skill or kusala skill at this moment. But when we're talking about something very frivolous or whatever, then no benefit. So it comes down to the citta, whether it is kusala at this moment or not.
But there is the chetasika manasakara.
Because that is a skill with ignorance, avicca, and attachment.
Yes, but is that skill is coloured by the ignorance and attachment, but is it skilled by itself? So, for example, you mentioned language. It's obviously good to be skilled with language when we talk about the Dharma. But of course, that skill is something separate, isn't it?
But what about the understanding? You can speak skillfully in language, but no understanding, or very little understanding.
Yes, yes, that's true.
So, at moments of understanding, like now, if it is kusala citta, then it conditions skillful speech or deeds. But if it's akusala cittas, it conditions speech and deeds, which we would say is unskillful, even though on a conventional level it would be called skillful.
Mm-hmm. So what was meant by saying that it's a great blessing to be skilled in arts and science? That is in one of the suttas, isn't it?
When it can be used in kusala way.
When it can be used in kusala way. Okay. Because we can use a good job in kusala way because we can afford to come here, so that's this kind of using it. Is that what you mean? So when you have a livelihood that you can use to help people, that's of a benefit.
It always comes down to kusala now. Like, okay, yes, we could share the lunch because of having certain abilities to do that or something like that, or coming here, but it always has to come down to kusala cittas at this moment, otherwise those abilities or those skills are of no use at all.
When there is akusala, there's no calm. And when there's kusala, there's always calm. So there seems to be a reason why there's calm and a reason why there's not calm. And so when there's detachment, there's calm at that moment. So the kusala conditions the calmness as it comes. So why is there calmness with kusala and agitation with akusala? What is the reason that there would be calm with Kusa, because actually is that because there's detachment from the idea of self, do you think?
And because the mental factor pasadi chetasika arises with each kusala chitta, with each sobhana chitta, in fact. So at that moment, that is the nature of chitta, that it is calm, that it's accompanied by calmness, no restlessness, which is a kusala factor. Kusala factors cannot arise with kusala chittas. And so when there is lobha, udaccha is there, restlessness is there, because it arises with every akusala chitta. It's disturbed at that moment.
And it's the nature of reality itself.
The nature of akusala is to be
akusala, and the nature of kusala is kusala.
So they can't be mixed. Kusala chitta cannot arise with akusala factors and vice versa.
No, and I can understand that if you want something which isn't now, then obviously then I can see that you wouldn't be calm because it's not here. So you're, in a sense, dissatisfied with the present moment.
And even at the moment of, for example, we're talking about focusing on breath, and when it seems to slow down and it seems quiet and it seems calm, actually attachment is there. So, in fact, there is disturbance, there is restlessness, udaccha. In fact, it's not calm at that moment. So what is taken for calm usually is not calm at all.
And I suppose the same with concentration, that the kusala chitta is more concentrated, or the concentration is higher with the kusala chitta.
Like when robbing a bank, the concentration, the akusala concentration, can be very strong. Usually when concentration is apparent in daily life, like when concentrating on the driving or concentrating on chopping up the vegetables for one's cooking, it's akusala chitta.
So to go back to what you were saying about nothing, so you're explaining... This seems to be another way of explaining anatta, not self, so that there's nothing at all, then by conditions a reality arises and then it's gone. It seems to another aspect of anatta. Is that right? Why do you use that?
Because it's the truth. Absolute truth. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the meaning of the world. The definition of the world is whatever arises is the world, because that which arises and falls away is the world. Six worlds.
So conventionally we have the idea of the world, of the earth, the solar system and the galaxy, which is just the world of thinking, doing exactly the same, arising and falling.
They really arise, but no one knows. One takes it for something all the time. Like it's there, like the table is there from morning. But actually, its reality arises and falls away.
Sarah mentioned that there was another unconditioned reality, space.
Must be only Nibbana, the unconditioned. And space as well, when we talk about that which is not in between the kalapas.
Is unconditioned.
That which is in between kalapas is conditioned.
Is
conditioned by karma, because the rupa.
Yes. And that the space in between the kalapas is unconditioned.
It's conditioned.
It's conditioned. Yeah. So there's only one unconditioned reality.
Two.
I'm getting confused here.
So the space that is in between the kalapas is conditioned by the same. In the same way as that kalapa that it separates. So if that kalapa is conditioned by karma, that space in between kalapas is also conditioned by karma. But there is the other space, the outer space, which is not conditioned, which is not the same as the space between the kalapas.
But we don't need to worry about that, do we?
We know that there are also kalapa in objects like... what is taken for the table, for example. And there must be also space between those kalapas. They cannot be conditioned by karma, right?
No, because the kalapas that are what we call the table, that they're all conditioned by temperature. So those kalapas have to be conditioned by temperature, and the space separating them has to be conditioned by temperature. So whatever conditions those kalapas, which the space divides, it's conditioned in the same way.
Okay, so when we say that the space that is conditioned by karma, it's only referring
only
to,
referring
the,
to
the
when
body.
The rupas are conditioned by karma, and if the rupas are conditioned by the kalapas are conditioned by nutriment, the space separating those kalapas is also conditioned by nutriment. So just exactly the same.
Okay.
I thought it might be good to bring Ian back in since his last afternoon and bring up one of the things we discussed for further consideration because it's interesting. I mentioned that after seeing and hearing through the sense doors, there is thinking which is either kusala or akusala. And I think you thought that there could also be neutral thinking.
Say it again, please.
Yes. The thinking that follows experiences through the sense doors must be either kusala or akusala in the Javana Jittas.
Not for arahata. So if we include...
Yeah, right. We did discuss the case of the arahat, but for the ordinary being, yes, it cannot be neutral, so...
And what do you mean by neutral? Feeling or reality or what? Neutral.
Oh, hopefully both that you can explain, but when we discuss mainly feeling first, right? I'm making an example. We were in the car and saw the traffic, so I don't have a preference over there. So I say, but it's just objects hitting the eye doors and my mind arises, recognize all the objects outside, right? So that's all. I don't have feeling of I like this, I don't like that. That's why I raised the question, why has it to be one way or the other, not in between, right?
Talk about kusala and akusala only?
Yes.
Talk about just kusala and akusala, right? Or neutral feeling or what? Or neutral.
We're talking about the citta being kusala or akusala, and the question is why can the citta not be neutral, neither kusala nor akusala?
At the moment when there's no attachment and no aversion at all, what is there? The citta without attachment and aversion. Is it that any moment in life without attachment and without aversion?
Why not?
Why not? So it is akusala with ignorance. At that moment, without attachment and without aversion. It cannot be wholesome because there is no understanding of that at all, of seeing or thinking. So it cannot be wholesome. When it's not wholesome, when we talk about just two things, wholesome and unwholesome. At moment when it's not wholesome, it must be unwholesome. But there is no attachment and no aversion at that moment. So it's moment with ignorance, alone, without aversion or attachment. But it's akusala because it's not the understanding or being aware of that object as kusala moments. So there are many moments of ignorance. Moha is ignorance, or avicca cannot understand that moment. And sometimes there is attachment with that moment too, so there are both ignorance and attachment some moments, and some moment aversion with ignorance, and some moment only ignorance without attachment and aversion. So it seems like in between, but actually it's unwholesome when it's not wholesome. If we don't talk about the kriyajitas at all.
In brief, if there's no, at those times, if there's no kindness or no generosity or no understanding, no wholesomeness of any kind, then it's unwholesome. So most of the day, most of the time, it's unwholesome. From as soon as we wake up in the morning until we go to sleep, most of the day, it's unwholesome. And ignorance is there most of the time, because ignorance arises whenever there's attachment or whenever there's aversion, or even without attachment and aversion, just not knowing.
The thing to mention is that there can be subtle attachment or subtle aversion that we're not, doesn't register as either. So we think it's neutral, but in fact it's subtle version of attachment or aversion.
I think the logic I understand. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I'm thinking maybe there's... I don't know what's the details of the conversation, but maybe there's also discussion about objects of seeing being either pleasant or unpleasant, whether that was the issue at some point. Because the objects of seeing, as we know, is not never neutral. It's pleasant or unpleasant. There's no such thing as neutral there. And then following it is kusala or akusala citta. And we're talking here about the akusala citta being basically three types: attachment, aversion, and ignorance. So these three are associated with different feelings. When it's ignorance, it can be with neutral feelings. Even with attachment, it can be with neutral feelings. And when there's ignorance, we don't know what it is.
So there's a difference between wholesome and unwholesome, and pleasant and unpleasant feeling, of course. Yeah, that's the point.
And then there's the feeling. So pleasant feeling can arise with attachment, or pleasant feeling can arise with kusala. So we cannot judge by the feeling. Unpleasant feeling, of course, only arises with unwholesome, with dosa. Like if we feel sorry for the animal that's suffering and there's unpleasant feeling, of course it's unwholesome at those moments. But then neutral feeling, when it seems that there's no pleasant feeling, neutral feeling can also arise with attachment or with ignorance. So when it just seems that there's no, one doesn't feel pleasant or unpleasant feeling, there's neutral feeling, it can just be with ignorance too. So what we find is the more understanding is developed, the more of what is usually taken for being wholesomeness is actually unwholesome, so more and more unwholesomeness is known. Most of the day, it's unwholesome, cheetahs arising.
And one other point we discussed, and which came up again this morning, I think, was the hypothetical first moment of, say, generosity or awareness. You know what I'm talking about? Yes. So I'm just, what I haven't quite followed from your question is, what is the significance of this this situation that you raise, and you wanted to put forward a hypothetical first moment?
Just a quick recap. We're talking about one of the examples, right? We use is the monks who already have awareness, and then they practice, right? But my question arises, then Jonathan suggested, if in past experience, past karma, if one hasn't accumulated any of those understanding, then this particular person won't be able to understand any of this, won't be able to acquire any knowledge. I was wondering, if that is the case, what happened then for the... For the very beginning, how would one acquire any knowledge if that's not possible to acquire new one? roughly sum up. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, I understand your question. The thing is, I'm reminded about the sutta where this trader gets shot by an arrow and he wants answers. So I think the message is that it's just a wrong way to think about things, because there's dukkha now, and it can be understood in terms of the conditions now, and that's the important thing. And like I was trying to say this morning, we can understand that if attachment rises now, that there was attachment accumulated, that this has arisen because of attachment in the past. If there's understanding, it has arisen in the past. I think there's no point trying to figure when the first moment of attachment arose, or when the first moment of wisdom arose, and before that, what could have conditioned the attachment, the wisdom. I don't think it's useful.
Fully agree, but the question in my mind is, how could I acquire new knowledge at all if I don't have understanding?
Don't mind
about not tracing back at all.
Don't mind about that. Just listen and talk, and then one can see whether there can be understanding. Listen carefully can condition right understanding, instead of thinking about the past or the accumulation, right? Because it's beyond thinking. But now each word can be considered carefully in order to really understand it. For example, awareness, what is it? We talk about awareness loosely, it seems like one understands it clearly, but actually is that awareness, that it is awareness, which is kusala. So what is awareness? You talk about the person who has a lot of great awareness, right? But if there is no understanding of awareness, how can we know that that person has great awareness if there is no understanding of awareness? So first of all, what is awareness? So we can say who has awareness or who has no awareness at all. If there is no understanding of awareness, there cannot be understanding of people who have awareness and people who do not have awareness.
What is awareness?
How do you know that anyone or someone has great awareness?
How do I know?
Yes.
Does someone have great awareness?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to know if somebody else, the mind itself can only observe at this particular moment.
We discussed it yesterday. So what is awareness as you understand it?
Or from the very beginning, is there awareness? Is there a reality which is awareness? Or is it only word about it?
It can be words, but I think awareness is when your mind...
The nature of awareness, the characteristic of awareness, when it's real, it has its own characteristic, which is different from other realities. There are so many realities, and one is awareness. So what is it which is different from the others? In Pali, it is sati. Right? So what is it?
I was thinking when you say so many, and then what is the difference? I'm trying to think, but let me say what my understanding is. There are some just seeing, right? Okay, seeing, and then you're aware. The mind itself recognize this object. Then that's what you're aware of. So that is one of the awareness, right?
Is it like concentration?
You can have concentration, but without awareness. right? Because if you're doing something that you're familiar and you concentrate on doing that,
you mean awareness is different from concentration. Awareness is not concentration. So at this moment, is that concentration or awareness?
Both. Because I concentrate and aware at the same time, right? I'm concentrating, meaning I am focusing on what you're saying and try to understand the words from my past memories or knowledge, understanding, whatever. At the same time, I'm aware my body and then seeing the objects and the sensations that the temperature, hardness on the floors, the sound, other sounds. So that is awareness to me as well.
Is there concentration all the time?
Definitely no, yes.
Is there awareness all the time?
No, not it's not continuous.
So what is the nature of concentration of a reality which is concentration? What is a reality, right? Concentration is a reality. It's real, isn't it?
Let me help a little bit. So concentration, the mental factor, the chetasika, it arises with every single chitta during life. It's one of the universal chetasikas. That means it arises at every moment and it focuses on the object that chitta experiences. If it doesn't focus on that object, chitta cannot experience the object. So at a moment of seeing, there is concentration which focuses on visible object so that seeing can experience the visible object. At a moment of kusala, concentration focuses on the object of that kusala chitta. At a moment of akusala, it focuses on the object of akusala chitta. So concentration arises at every moment. It can be kusala, it can be akusala, it can be vipaka, the result of karma at moments of seeing or hearing, or it can be kriya, that means not kusala, not akusala, and not vipaka. But sati, or awareness, only arises with wholesome, or we can say beautiful, chittas, because also with some result chittas, and is aware of that object. So when we, like yesterday, we talked about how people convention have an idea of being aware when lifting the cup or moving it slowly or writing a letter. This has nothing to do with sati awareness, because it has to arise with kusala chittas. So at a moment of when the thief is taking the objects that doesn't belong to him and there's a lot of concentration, but no sati, because no kusala chittas arising at that time. Even now we're having a discussion, we're not thinking about trying to be aware, but when there are wholesome chittas at moments of understanding, sati is there, it is aware. And when we're talking about understanding, we're talking about sati, which begins to be aware of the reality at this moment, even if it's just at an intellectual level in the beginning. And it's this sati which develops with understanding until it is directly aware of the reality that is experienced. So these different realities, it's very precise when they arise. So sati can only arise with wholesome chittas or results of wholesome chittas or kriya chittas. But concentration arises at every moment in life, whether now or chopping vegetables or eating lunch or going to the bathroom, moments of seeing, hearing, thinking, liking, disliking, concentration is there. So if someone has the idea of becoming more concentrated, it's bound to be unwholesome concentration with attachment.
And apart from the mental factors of concentration and awareness, which Sarah has just been describing, there are conventional ideas of these terms. Conventional concentration is something that we would say requires some effort. Conventional awareness means knowing what we're doing, that kind of thing, right? And that was the kind of awareness you were describing earlier. Right, so knowing what is being seen now, or paying close attention to the meaning of what has been said, these would be conventional ideas of concentration and awareness. But in the Buddha's teaching, these terms refer to specific mental factors which have particular functions. One of Ajahn's earlier questions was, how can it be known whether someone, oneself or another, has awareness? And she's referring there to awareness of the kind taught by the Buddha, awareness that accompanies understanding that leads to enlightenment. Because the knowledge of, I know what I'm doing at the moment, which is conventional awareness, that could never lead to enlightenment, because there's nothing outstanding. It's just ordinary.
I mean, and we know that Ajahn often talks about the importance along the way of development of understanding, of knowing the difference between moments when there's awareness, when there's sati, and when there is not. But that's not because we want to have sati, right? And it's different from people who practice particular practice in order to have sati, because that's they're liable to mistake what is not sati for sati. And I think it's very difficult to understand sati. And we can see that that prior to understanding sati, there must be a lot of intellectual understanding about everything, not just sati.
Yes, that was my question in the Thai session in the foundation. To know what sati is, when one knows the difference between the moment there is sati and the moment there is no sati. And I find that always difficult, because if we are not sure about awareness of one object, we cannot know. And what I find helpful about concentration, that there can be known only one object at a time. So one may think, oh, I know so many things now, and an impression of so many things. But that's not true. It's only one object at a time. Because if there's an impression of many things, it's a concept or idea. It's still one object.
And on your question about the sati and not sati, this is why we have to hear a lot about different realities, because otherwise, for sure, it's going to be an idea of being aware of a conventional situation. So this is why there has to be understanding of what is real at this moment. And as soon as there's an idea of trying to know it or be aware of when there's sati and not sati, it's attachment again, hindering, trying to work it out rather than just letting understanding develop naturally.
Ajahn says when there is sati, no sati, one considers. So it's not really trying to work it out, but one realizes.
Not by trying to know it or trying to consider, but naturally, as understanding develops, there is considering, there is wise considering about all kinds of realities, about attachment, about concentration, about awareness, but not trying to know or trying to consider, is this sati or not sati, or when is sati? So attachment can come in very easily, the trap again.
Yeah, I think it's a wish to know at once or to understand straight away, and that is not possible because it's a long, long, long development.
And that doesn't come from the wish and desire to understand sati, because it's never about understanding, it's about having it. People just want to have sati, not to understand what appears.
So what words can we use to describe sati when it arises? So we've heard, I think yesterday or the day before, that now a reality shows up well. So that characteristic of reality is known as a reality. So if it's hardness or softness, there is not the forgetting of that characteristic. So showing up well is one way we could perhaps learn to understand what sati is. But are there other ways, or what words can we use to describe the characteristic of sati when it arises?
At the moment it arises, it remembers not to be forgetful. It is not to be unwholesome and at that moment. So it is aware in a wholesome way of the reality that appears. Because usually, as we said, there is just ignorance and attachment. But at that moment, the citta is wholesome. And there is awareness of what appears. But appearing well, it has to develop. In the beginning, like now, the reality doesn't appear well. So awareness has to develop with understanding until it appears well, gradually.
And can we say that it gets rid of concepts at that moment? Because the reality is just a reality. It has its own characteristic. So it's like shining a light on that characteristic of reality.
It doesn't get rid of anything, because it's like just like now in daily life. So visible object is seen. At a moment when visible object is seen, it doesn't get rid of concepts. Only visible object appears at that moment, but usually to ignorance. So instead of appearing to ignorance as usual, sometimes it can appear to understanding and awareness. So nothing is changed, nothing is got rid of. Life isn't any different from usual. It's not any more scary. It's just exactly as it is.
Concepts are not to be got rid of. Realities are to be understood and not to be confused.
At the moment of awareness, there's no concept. So it's got rid of in the sense that when there is awareness of reality, there's no concept at that moment. There's no.
I don't think that's the correct approach. There's no getting rid of anything, because at the moment of seeing, there's no concept either. But would you say it's getting rid of concept?
No, getting rid of at that moment. But we always have the idea of the table, the chair, I. But at the moment of awareness, that is not there. It's just a characteristic of a reality. So in that sense...
What about at this moment when there's a moment of intellectual right understanding about the concept of visible object? At that moment, there is awareness, but the object is concept of the reality.
Yes. So the intellectual understanding doesn't get rid of the concept, but awareness itself, it doesn't change anything, because obviously there's still the thinking, but afterwards... But it's just that at that moment, there's just that characteristic of reality. It's not something.
It depends whether, because as we said, sati arises with each sobhana citta, so it depends on what kind of sati and what level of sati. If we're talking about satipatthana, then the object is reality. But if we're talking about pariyatti understanding or understanding which is not yet direct understanding of reality, then the object is concept of reality.
But what are to be got rid of are not concepts, but the wrong idea of concepts. And wrong idea is a reality. Wrong view. So awareness can help to overcome wrong view. Awareness accompanied by understanding can help that.
No, I think what you're making the distinction is that at the moment of right understanding, it's a reality. At the moment of satipatthana, it's a reality. a characteristic of reality, which is the object, not an idea, not a concept. I think that's what you're saying. Your question earlier about, I think it was about awareness, and okay, anyway, I was thinking about the importance of the approach to it, is that I think it's to emphasize understanding. Once you emphasize understanding, you know that understanding understands the characteristic of a reality, nama or rupa, then you know that the associated mental factors, which include sati, will also have the same reality as object. So I think that's the beginning. So from there we can understand that when it's a concept, that's not satipatthana.
Correct. So that means that it gets rid of taking the concept for something real, like the spoon.
Just the way to say, simplest, there's no concept at that moment when you say getting rid.
Yeah, at the moment of awareness, a right awareness.
No concept.
There's no concept. At that level. But so we're talking at quite a high level here. But this has to be known for it to be developed. We have to know the difference between when there is awareness and when there is no awareness to be able to move forwards, to develop. And at the moment of awareness, we can say that the reality is a little bit clearer than before. It is turning towards the reality and not the idea of something. Because at the end, in the perfect understanding, there are just realities.
So what about just talking about understanding now at this moment? So, because otherwise it's always about what's at the end. What about now? So now visible object is seen, it's real. There can be understanding, there can be awareness of visible object, and as it develops, it becomes firmer and firmer, and the object appears more and more clearly to understanding, so that it's until it is just that reality which is known. But we don't have to think about, well, what will happen when it's vipassana jnana or one is enlightened, but what about just understanding now, developing awareness now of what appears, which is the reality.
And you said at the end there are just reality. What did you mean by at the end?
When there's the perfect understanding, the wrong view is got rid of, and so that life is realities arising and falling away in a split second, either nama, the reality which experiences, or rupa. There's not some permanent person with arms and legs who walks in a place. That's the wrong view of reality.
There are still concepts.
There's still concepts, yeah. It's just that it gets rid of concepts at that tiny little moment. There's no thinking. So when there is awareness at that moment, the reality is the object. Immediately afterwards there's the idea of spoon. That will always happen.
Yes.
Or not necessarily happen, but
well,
it...
Well, what about now, like at a moment of seeing just visible object, if there's understanding, it is understanding of visible object, and thinking of tables and spoons and cups as usual, with or with not, without any understanding. So it's just like ordinary life, otherwise it seems like it's life is somehow different, but it's just like now, but understanding and awareness develop to understand the nature of life, the nature of reality more and more clearly and firmly until there's no misunderstanding.
But we have to understand the characteristic of awareness when it arises. We have to know the difference between awareness and no awareness.
Like any reality now, when it appears, if it appears, because otherwise if there's trying so hard to know awareness and trying to pinpoint when there's awareness and unawareness, then it's just like trying to pinpoint breath or anything else. It's self at work again. It's wrong practice, or it's like trying to be aware of visible object. So we know that when people go off to the meditation center, it's wrong practice conditioned by wrong understanding. But even now, if it's trying to understand now whether there's awareness or not awareness and exactly what visible object is, it's not the natural understanding of what appears without any expectation and without any selection at all. So the reason we hear about different kinds of realities is because the wise considering conditions the development of understanding and awareness now in daily life, but without trying to have it or without expecting it or without thinking this one must be the object of understanding or awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise it's just more attachment all the time.
Yes, but still we have to know. And the original question was, what is awareness? Mm-hmm. So we need to know what is meant by that term precisely in order to know who is being aware, who isn't being aware, but also how to develop it. So it's what do we mean by that term? What do we mean by seeing? We learn very precisely intellectually that it's a reality which experiences. So it seems to me that we do need to know the precise understanding, intellectual, of what is meant by awareness.
Well, it has a reality as object.
Yes.
Is the point.
Yes.
But that's not... when you go on to say you got rid of concept,
well, because
seems to be... a totally different...
Well, because there's no concept at that point, at that moment.
I know, but...
So therefore, at that moment in life...
Well, you've said that the reality, the object is a reality.
Well, no, I think... Oh, yes, I take your point. It sounds like we get rid of people and things, which we don't, because we still think about those things. It was just a manner of expression. But at that moment, there's no concept.
Is it a useful kind of thing to say when you've said that the object is a reality? Why do you go on to say...
It gets rid of concepts. Because we live in the world of concepts all the time. We live in an ocean of concepts. Until there is that moment of awareness when there is just a reality. So there's no concept. So, yes, I take your point. My expression is perhaps a bit over the top. But actually, at that moment... there is a reality and no concept. Afterwards, we can think. And there may be awareness of thinking to say that's a type of reality as well. There's no thing in that thinking. But so that's why I said that there's no concept at that moment.
Are you trying to say that otherwise it's just like a black sheet covering and moments of awareness is like a pin? And that is different from the rest.
That's it, the phone notification. It's ping, yes. The moment of awareness is ping, reality, then gone, then back in the world of concepts. So that's this ping is what we have to understand. When is there a ping? When is there no ping?
I don't know if we have to understand that. From that, because in the end, it's just what appears that can be understood. And there's no choosing which reality. And logically...
that would be like, if I could just interrupt, describing seeing by saying no hearing. Seeing gets rid of hearing. Well, it's just not a relevant consideration. Only seeing.
At the moment of seeing, there's no hearing, so that has to be understood.
I think that is just a way to explain the different moments between awareness and unawareness. That's all. But if there is no understanding of awareness, we might take something as awareness. Like, now I'm aware, but actually it's not awareness. That's why there should be the understanding of awareness as it is.
Right. Yes. But in terms of understanding it directly, first there has to be awareness.
There must be the intellectual understanding, like what moment is moment of awareness, at what level. Because awareness is a reality, mental factor, which arises with all wholesome jittas. Without this, the citta cannot be wholesome, and without other wholesome cittasikas, the wholesome citta cannot arise at all. But awareness is different from other cittasikas. So we can see the difference between samadhi, concentration, and awareness. Otherwise, without the understanding of awareness, which is different from concentration, one will take concentration for awareness, or think that I will be aware. That's wrong, because awareness cannot arise with the idea of I at all.
I was just thinking earlier that the question about whether or not there's awareness is only when we want to have awareness. If just developing understanding, then we don't mind because we just keep hearing and developing
That's
understanding.
That's because of the understanding of awareness is so clear that no one can do anything at all. So as much as we can know in daily life, it's moments which are wholesome must be awareness. Even right now, at moment of understanding, there is awareness with other many cetasikas arising. Who knows? So we are talking about realities which arise and fall away in split seconds all the time. But nobody, no one knows until right understanding begins to hear about it and develop the understanding that there is no one. No matter at what time, there are only realities, citta, cetasikas, and rupa, which is always forgotten all the time, even right now. So in order to understand each reality as it is, like awareness and concentration, we should talk more about the difference between awareness and concentration, so that we will not take concentration for awareness.
I also remember Ajahn usually say that we don't need to say a lot about awareness, because it's not the reality that appears. It is there at any moment of understanding, but because it doesn't appear, then it cannot be object of understanding. There's one thing like that. I have a question, because we know that we need to study each word at a time and deeply each word. And at the same time, sometimes we also are inclined to pinpoint about realities. So what is the borderline between the two? The borderline between studying each word, the meaning of each word, understand it deeply, and pinpointing it.
Or developing understanding, you mean? From hearing to the moment when it is a direct understanding. So we can understand that awareness is aware, usually, of the object of kusala, of dana or sila, while there's no thinking about it at all in the day. But at moment of kusala, it is awareness which is aware of that level of kusala. But when we talk about satipatthana, it's different, because it has to be the understanding of reality as foundation for its arising only. Because without understanding that there is no one at all, if there is no such understanding, there cannot be moment of awareness at all. Because awareness, when we talk about the level of patipatti, not just intellectual, it means the moment when it arises and is aware of the characteristic of a reality. So one has to understand the reality, not people and things, but the reality of our reality, which we have no expectation which one will be object of right awareness, because it hasn't risen yet. So just having more understanding about realities, no expectation, it can be condition for direct awareness to arise. By then, the characteristic of awareness appear, because one learned from hearing and having more confidence on right awareness or satipatthana, that it is aware of a reality with understanding which one has heard before. So understanding there understands that characteristic as no self. So there must be moment of understanding awareness, that it is different from moment without awareness, because the object appears well, and well hears, and well hears doesn't mean that it appears well right now because it's heard, but no understanding, no awareness. Hardness appears as it is, whatever, whenever, but at moment of direct awareness arises, it understands the characteristic as no self, only the element which is hard, with right understanding that it is right awareness at that moment. So the object appears well. Like now, hardness appears but not well with our understanding. So the meaning of appearing well means that with understanding and the characteristic of awareness appear, so the objects appear well to direct awareness and understanding. Even just very short moment, but it's there, accumulated on and on and on, until it can condition moment of better understanding. And right understanding knows the difference between moments when there is more understanding and less attachment.
Your question, I got it the second time, about what you call the borderline between studying and pinpointing. So at this moment when one's considering wisely about different realities in daily life that have to be known, like samadhi and sati, seeing, hearing, these are the realities that need to be considered wisely. But when there is trying to pinpoint, like, oh, is there sati now, or is this not sati, or trying to work out whether it is visible object and how light it is at this moment, then it's attachment at that moment of pinpointing. So actually it's not a matter of there's some sort of borderline, either it's kusala citta or akusala citta. So they may be reflecting about visible object now as the reality which is seen with kusala citta or akusala citta with attachment.
Between understanding,
reflecting wisely or reflecting unwisely, like if one's just repeating the terms or the labels or the Pali or just what one's heard but without any understanding, or trying to get it, trying to be aware, then it's akusala.
So if the question now about whether any object appears well now?
No.
Because it appears hardness, whisper object, sound, everything, but not as well as when there is understanding with direct awareness.
The point is it has to develop gradually, as Nina kept stressing. So it's not a matter of there being no understanding of reality and then suddenly vipassana and jnana, understanding when everything is clear for an instant and then concepts as usual. Understanding develops gradually, awareness develops gradually.
And naturally too.
So Acharya is saying appearing well is the function of sati?
And panya together.
Question about the something nothing, because like you were saying, or as the texts say, let's say the suttas talk about how when seeing arises, it arises by conditions. Before that there was no seeing, and after that seeing there is no seeing. So from nothing there is something that's seeing, and then nothing. The other day you were referring to how any reality now which appears actually, it's also nothing because it's so insubstantial and impermanent, like a bubble, and gone immediately. So then it's like from nothing, there's nothing to nothing.
Yeah, can Vanya understand that directly?
Only
vipassana jnana.
Yeah, when it's when the impermanence of reality is understood, I think.
But from hearing and having more confidence that actually there's nothing to be object of clinging as usual, because nothing all the time. Something only when it appears, and then nothing again. So actually, the world is nothing.
Can one say that what the meaning of that is, that actually each conditioned reality is so insubstantial or inconsequential, of no importance whatsoever, because it's so impermanent? So
until Panya sees that.
Oh, that's the meaning.
Because we hear a lot, but it's not yet that degree.
Because before, for example, we've discussed the sutta about Ritika, or about the meaning of nothing, and you've mentioned that in comparison to Nibbana, each conditioned reality is nothing. But who except an enlightened one can see that compared to Nibbana it's nothing? But now you're suggesting even when it's direct understanding at the level of Vipassana Jnana, it's clear that it's nothing, of no consequence at all.
So Panya develops on and on to be the moment of enlightenment, the Four Noble Truths, not just the First Truth.
And nothing here does not mean no reality. It just means reality has the characteristic of being nothing.
Reality has the characteristic of being so impermanent and of no consequence at all, because it's gone instantly. And it's not anyone or anything, and gone immediately.
Now, because some people like to think that nothing, as in ritaka, means there's no reality.
So to recap, the path begins with detachment, and then as understanding develops, that also conditions detachment, because the more that reality is understood as being inconsequential or boring, that conditions detachment in itself, and then it ends in no attachment. That's the sort of summary of the attachment.
Oh, you said boring.
Yeah. Ajahn Sajin mentioned it a couple of days ago, that seeing arises by conditions, falls away, then hearing arises by conditions, falling away. So I guess it's like, it's unsatisfactory, and that's in the suttas as well. I guess it's being a bit like in a movie, where if you go to a movie for an hour and a half, it's quite interesting, but actually if you go to a movie from breakfast until you go to bed, it actually might get a bit boring. So that's
but
my
boring
analogy.
Seemed to be another reality.
Well, it's not satisfactory.
With panya or with attachment?
It's not satisfactory with a panya.
So it can bring joy and pleasant moment, happy feeling to know the truth, better than not knowing at all.
That's what Ajahn often says in Thai, rather to be courageous and with cheerfulness when knowing the truth.
Usually if one talks about being bored, it's with dosa usually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kuniraj, you said that I know the meaning of courageous, but did you say it's joyous?
Cheerfulness.
Cheerfulness.
Yeah.
With courageous.
As rare.
Yes, to know the truth.
It has a meaning of
better than to understand
that's
the truth, that this is the absolute truth.
Cheerfulness too.
To know.
Ah, yes.
To know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh.
Yes.
Cheerful.
Yes, yes.
To go on.
Yeah, courageous.
Yeah.
Ajahn, that seems like to refer to many associated chetisikas, confidence being one of them, cheerfulness and pleasant feeling and detachment. I mean, what is cheerfulness? Why would there be cheerfulness?
But not Mr. Attachment.
Yeah.
Not with attachment.
It's the panya. Because panya can arise with happy feeling.
But panya just knows. So what is what chetasika is functioning as cheerfulness?
Piti.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Piti, joy. Yeah, piti.
Wholesome joy. Yeah, usually when we say cheerfulness, it sounds like lobha, but wholesome joy, piti.
Yeah.
Little by little.
He looks so happy.
Conscious. I didn't know that. I didn't know that it's associated with the meaning of cheerfulness.
Cheerfulness can be the object of lobha.
For us, usually it is lobha.
Yeah.
To be courageous, to be courageous to understand lobha and all other realities as no self.
We were chatting about kanda and upadana kanda and about how each rupa in life is rupa kanda, but it's only upadana kanda when it is the object of clinging, and no matter it's the rupa of the table, the rupa of the body, the rupa of the Buddha's body, at the moment of it is clung to by anyone's cheetahs, then at that moment it's upadana kanda. And Tadao had a question about how each reality, each conditioned rupa, each conditioned sanya and so on is kanda because of the English translation of aggregate. And we were talking about how any rupa, far, near, past, future, each one is rupa kanda, and that is the meaning of the word kanda, because it each one arises and falls away, as we were saying, something, nothing, something doesn't last for an instant, and that's the meaning of kanda. Is there anything else about that that we were you were surprised about?
No, one thing I'd like to ask about upadana kanda, as Sarah mentioned, that for instance, one single rupa, when single rupa becomes object of clinging, then that particular rupa can be called rupupada kanda or not.
Why we call that rupupada kanda? Why? Because there is clinging of that object.
But
within.
Kanda means aggregates.
Kanda is whatever arises and falls away. No matter nama and rupa, all conditioned realities are khandas.
Yeah.
But we classify them by way of five khandas, by way of clinging.
Oh.
Because there is clinging very much to the rupa tana kanda, to vedana, to sanya, to sankhara kanda, and vinyana kanda. Means all khandas.
But
let's
take an example of a single rupa arising and falling away of one rupa, and when it becomes an object of a clinging,
Then
it's called clinging object of upadana kanda.
Like who sees?
I have sort of naive idea that when there is a arising and falling away of, say, rupa, and it becomes an object of our clinging, at that moment, there has to be other four khandhas, citta, and vedana, and samya.
Right.
And so, I thought that whole thing would be called...
Each one is object of clinging.
One at a time. Only one at a time.
Because attachment can only cling to one object at a time.
So
it cannot cling to all the khandhas.
So one at a time. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it becomes just a group of
clinging.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Achan, can you explain what Tadao is referring to?
One at a time and becoming a group.
It means that there is clinging to everything in life, to all five khandhas, all kinds of reality.
Do you understand what khandhas are, Helena and Ian? Do you know what
khandhas? No, just heard that. I mean, I grasped it.
Right, okay. So this is a way of classifying realities. So in this way, when we talk about khandhas, we're referring to all the conditioned realities which arise and fall away. So each rupa, each visible object, each sound, each taste is rupa khanda. It means rupa which arises and falls away. So we can talk about the collection of rupas because each one is rupa khanda and each one can be the object of clinging. And each feeling, you were talking about pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling, no matter what kind of feeling it is Vedana Khanda, and each feeling can be the object of clinging. And usually in a day, we find the rupas, the sense objects experience, very, very important. And the feelings, we mind a lot about the feeling. We love pleasant feeling. We try so hard to avoid unpleasant feeling. So a lot of importance is given to feelings. And the third group is sanya khanda. Sanya is memory. At each moment in life, there is memory, remembering and marking the object experienced. Without memory, then there cannot be any thinking about what's seen and heard. There cannot be any understanding of realities at all developed. So each memory is sanya khanda, and each memory can be an object of clinging to. And the fourth one refers to all the other mental factors, concentration, awareness, attachment, all these mental factors we've been discussing. Each one is sankhara khanda. Each one arises and falls away. Each one can be the object of clinging. And finally, vijnana khanda refers to each citta, each moment of consciousness. So throughout life, there's always a moment of consciousness arising and falling away. Seeing is a kind of citta. Thinking is a kind of citta. Hearing is a kind of citta. So each citta is a moment of consciousness throughout life. Each one is included in this khanda. Each one can be the object of clinging. There can be clinging to seeing, clinging to hearing, clinging to thinking. So the Buddha talked about realities in different ways just to point out how each one is impermanent, each one is not self. So by describing in different ways, it just highlights different aspects. So in this way, it's describing the impermanence of realities and how each one can be the object of clinging in a day.
Or if it's the case, can we say that when someone attains arahatship, from that moment to the moment of his parinibbana, his khanda is just five khandas. It's not khanda of clinging. It's pure five khandas.
It can each reality can still be upadana khanda because for example, even though the rupa of that arahat, for the arahat himself, his citta's no more clinging, but it can be clinging for the others around, like the rupas of the Buddha's body, object of clinging for others. So each rupa, his pleasant feeling with great piti, can be object of clinging for others. So even that great piti is upadana khanda.
Oh.
Any reality at all except Lokuttara Dhammas can be upadana khanda.
The classification into five khandas, distinguishing between sanya, vedana, and sankhara, does this also point to the fact that sanya
and Vedana are not Sankara khandhas.
Mm-hmm.
So the significance of khandhas is not just that they are, it's just realities that rise and fall away, but they're different also, each one.
So Sanya and Vedana are Sankara, but not Sankara Khanda, because they have their own Khanda.
But they're not Sankara Khanda.
Right,
because not just because they have their own, but because they're not accumulative, that's what I understand.
What do you mean they're not?
Accumulative in nature, like other chetasikas accumulate in intensity. For example, metta accumulates. It's not the case, same with Sanya and Vedana. They don't have that nature to accumulate.
Are you saying that Sanya or Vedana that arises with kusala and akusala chittas doesn't accumulate? The pleasant feeling doesn't accumulate? The pleasant feeling with lobha, that it doesn't accumulate?
That's what I understand.
You mean in intensity?
In intensity.
Because obviously Sanya does...
just marks.
And
no, just marks. Just marks. Each moment it just performs a function of marking. There's no such thing that there's a tendency to mark better or worse, or, you know. Same with Vedana, it's just a feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, that arises with each chitta. Whereas the other chetasikas, lopa, when it arises, it is increased the tendency to lopa, metta, the tendency to... Yeah, that's also another one.
What about when eating whatever you like, mango or chocolate cake, and the pleasant feeling, doesn't it get stronger and stronger each time you eat that chocolate cake? Doesn't it accumulate? So that if that pleasant feeling of lobha is strong enough, one goes to take some cake that doesn't belong to one or something?
I mean,
so that pleasant feeling is different degrees to accumulate?
I'm not sure. I mean, I would say that the lopa accumulates and it arises more often, but I'm not sure.
So what accumulates?
What accumulates is tendencies.
Kusala and akusala. That's why it includes the other chetasikas as well as Sankara Khanda, because without those chetasika, there cannot be kusala and akusala. So moments of kusala and akusala, the citta and all the mental factors accumulate. But the Vedana and Sanya, there's such significance, so much importance is given to them. What is the object of clinging right now?
For each person, a different reality.
Rupa Khanda, right?
Vedana
Khanda, Sanya Khanda, Sankara Khanda, Vinyana Khanda, all of them.
We also discussed a point, but I'm trying to find a way to make it fairly simple, about Bhavanga Chittas. So during life, when there are no sense door processes or mind door processes, like in deep sleep, there are still chittas, there are still life continuum chittas, and these we call Bhavanga chittas. And even now, in between sense door, mind door processes, there are Bhavanga chittas. So the very first moment of life actually is a kind of Bhavanga chitta, the birth consciousness. And throughout life, Bhavanga chittas during the day, during the night. And Tadao had a question. Well, first of all, we were pointing out and discussing how every Bhavanga chitta during life is exactly the same, has the same nature and experiences the same object, which is completely unknown and of no significance. And then I think you were asking about the Bhavanga chittas before the mind door process or in between the processes. Would you like to?
No, I'm thinking about Bhavanga chitta here in terms of accumulation. When we say, usually it's accumulation of kusala and akusala, yeah? And in the case of vidi chittas, well, it's very clear that these ksala and aksala would be accumulated, yeah? But how about witi mutta citta? Because of bhavanga citta is witi mutta citta, yeah? Which takes place between all these witi cittas, yeah? Are they qualitatively the same or not? Say, the first moment of, the second, okay, first bhavanga citta in this life and the last bhavanga citta in this life, yeah, which takes place before the chitta, yeah, are they qualitatively same or not in terms of accumulation of ksala and aksala?
They are result cittas, vipaka cittas. Yeah. So vipaka cittas don't accumulate. Yeah. So each one, each bhavanga citta is exactly the same, no difference, cannot accumulate, cannot change in nature. So certain ones have a specific name because of a particular function, but the actual citta is exactly the same in strength, intensity, object.
But, say...
The difference is the function.
Yeah, but... All the accumulation committed by these javana cittas, yeah, they have to somehow transform past the information, yeah, to a next citta, yeah, okay. And then if it is a next, if next citta is bhavanga citta, yeah, how would that sort of newly accumulated ksala or aksala can be passed?
No, we do make a distinction between the citta arisen and the accumulations that's passed on. I mean, if a kusala arises now, it doesn't mean that the kusala that's been accumulated is somehow defiled or polluted. It's also accumulated and it's being passed on even with the akusala citta. That's a different function. At that moment, what appears is one thing and what's passed on is something else.
But the latent tendencies that are accumulated in each citta going on and on also are in the bhavanga citta. That is true. The latent tendencies, anusaya. Anusaya are in the bhavanga cittas also. Every citta in life.
Let me just explain to some of the newcomers. So the latent tendencies, for example, the tendency to anger or the tendency to attachment, it doesn't arise at every moment. Like now, there's no anger, but it hasn't been eradicated. If there is a cause, if someone comes in and starts shouting, maybe immediately there's anger. So these tendencies which haven't been eradicated, they lie dormant in each citta, so they're carried on from each citta throughout life, and they condition the attachment or the aversion when those conditions are in place. This is what they're talking about.
And what's passed on is changing every time with each citta.
Including bhavanga
citta.
Yes.
Then,
so the
use a microphone.
After contact, the bhavanga citta would change, no?
It's manifestation. Not
manifestation.
Not manifestation. Bhavanga citta still has the same characteristic function, manifestation.
But being able to newly accumulate tendency to follow citta. Despite the fact,
that's
it's just despite the fact, it's
to,
just about
to accumulate
chitta.
And pass on. That's one function of chitta.
So are there kusala chittas and kusala chittas of these moments? Where are they?
I cannot say where they are.
They are gone.
Yeah.
But the accumulation is in each chitta. Each.
Like the memory that arose a moment ago is gone, but it is accumulated in the citta, so it can arise and remember that this is Azita or this is Sukhin anytime, because that tendency is accumulated.
memory is a very difficult subject to explain, sannyaya. For instance, and the Buddha recalls all the details of his previous lives before his attainment of enlightenment. And where that kind of memory come from is the question I often have. Is it accumulated? Is it stored in his bhavangacitta or jhanacitta? Where are these details stored?
It was stored even in moments of ignorance before his enlightenment. It's in all citta, not lost, never lost.
Otherwise, how can panya develop? And how can people have different inclination?
Same for everybody.
Only Buddha knew what are there in any moment of citta.
Today I'd like to ask just one question here. That in the function of kusala and aksara citta, which take place at the sense doors, and the function of the kusala and aksara citta, which take place at the mind door, And my question here is, when we compare these two types of kusala aksara cittas, what's the difference? To be more specific, I'd like to know whether kusala and aksara citta, which take place at the five sense doors, have any karmic power or not.
Which
means
mean
that it can produce result or not.
He wants to know whether the, for example, understanding which can arise in the sense door process, whether it can be kamapata.
Today, have you did any kamma?
Yeah.
What kamma?
It's helping other people.
Yes, at the table you have a lot.
That was a good deed.
And what?
And lucky you put your computer away.
And what about the akusala cittas?
A lot.
See, they are in citta.
Yeah, but the point is, Japanese cittas, which take place at sense doors, have any power to produce to commit kusala and aksala kamapada or not?
Let me ask you: does the akusala or kusala at the mind door, just one process, does that have a power to condition?
I don't know whether it's just one process or processes. They are associated. They can be associated with kamapada. It's very clear.
Well, I think kamapada, what we learn about kamapada is deeds done through body, speech, and mind, which require a lot of conditions. It's not just the arising of akusala. One moment of akusala, of akusala.
The point is, kusala and kama, kusala and aksara, chittas are the sense door. It's why such, no, to be very simple, simplest term, we experience our vipaka, we result through the sense doors. Then we create some kind of commit good deeds or bad deeds through the mind door. That's the simplest way to explain cause and result, Then why do the vipaka, kusala and aksara cittas take place at the sense doors, which I do not understand at all?
At moment of knowing that this is a cup, is it kusala kamma or akusala kamma or what?
To that extent, it's quite easy to understand because
it is only kilesa.
Because kusala and aksara take place even on the sense door because our deeply rooted sort of defilements.
Can that moment produce result? As
I would
kamma?
Say no.
So it's no.
Okay, that's all. Okay.
I think the question actually he had when we were talking on the van is because I said that even though in daily life we can say, know that the kusala and akusala kamapata is through the mind door, not through the sense door, but we cannot say impossible, because what about, for example, the anagami who has almost no attachment left? What about the understanding even in the sense
door? We just talk about whether it can produce results. So at moment of akusala, at moment of knowing or taking this for a cup, it doesn't bring any result.
That's clear. But we cannot say that under no circumstances in the sense door process there cannot be kamapata, because depend on who and what and when, like the understanding of the anagami that arises in sense door process.
There are many degrees of akusala, anusaya, and asava, and so on. So it depends on citta at that moment whether it is the degree of being able to produce result or not.
And also we know that a moment of right understanding arises with many other more chetasikas than unwholesome. So for anagami, it must be quite strong.
Very strong.
Yeah.
We cannot just say, never can there be kusala wa kusala kamapata in the mind doors.
So joy and courage? No, with akusala it's not.
No,
only with kusala.
Joyous! I'm very happy.
With akusala?
No, it's with kusala. But it's courageous, I know. But I didn't know that it's associated with the meaning of joy.
Cheerful.
That Thai word, rare.
Yeah.
When there's understanding of the truth.
But like you often remind us, lopa is around the corner.
Around the corner. Always.
And because it's your last session, anything else you would like to ask about Helena and Ian? Last chance? Ian?
There's no chance, so we cannot be last chance.
Okay, let's ask Ian. Yeah. And I'd like to know how you have found the discussions, Ian, because it's your first time coming here.
First of all, I hope a question raised or the comments I made didn't arouse any akusala feeling from anybody at all. If I do, I apologize.
No expectation, but
I
appreciate you.
Yeah, but I found it very interesting. I learned a few things. Most importantly, the latest impact, obviously, is the sati. Obviously, I go down to the wrong track, like John said, but yes, that's some findings. And at first, when I heard about this, I thought it's all intellectual discussion, right? It's just talks. So I was wondering, what can you achieve from that by so doing? But it seems there's something can be done even by talking, right? And it's just, say for example, you have to listen first to understand, then hopefully understand. If you don't even have a chance to listen to some of the things being mentioned, at least for the past day or so, then I probably won't be able to understand some part of it. So there's definitely a plus. But I still have doubts. Doubt meaning by merely sort of listening and discussing, and like I mentioned to John this morning, you can sort of read all the swimming manuals, things like that, everything. But if you never practice, throw into the deep water, I presume you'll drown right away. but that's my own understanding. Okay.
What's the best moment in one's life? What is the best moment? Best moment in one's life.
In oneself.
In one's life.
In one's life.
Yes.
I mean, for me, it's understanding the truth.
Yes.
Right. That's what keeps seeking.
And how can that be the understanding of the truth?
How can there be the understanding of the truth? How can there be understanding?
Like I said, first of all, you listening, but then again, you put it the way that if you don't have the past karma, then even you listen, you might not have the chance to listen. If you listen, you don't understand. You won't be able to understand. So, that is the.
That's not meant to discourage anyone. I mean, it's just a statement of fact to emphasize the importance of understanding leading to more understanding. It's not something else that will lead to understanding, but it is understanding that will lead to more understanding.
I think the point Ian's trying to make is that the factor is hearing the truth, and I made the comment that it's not something to be done, right? And we discussed that one cannot decide to hear the truth. It is one's good fortune if the circumstances are there. It's a result of past karma. Hmm.
Paul, you are soon closing this discussion, yeah? So I'd like to go back to his original question, yeah? Because you are talking about the benefit of practicing meditation, yeah? Yeah? And I have a very simple statement which I like, which I learned from Kunsuchin. That is, if a given teaching promotes any, even 1% of attachment, yeah? It is not Buddhism. And Buddhism promotes 100% detachment. Can you see it? So if somebody, if a given teacher said that there is such and such benefits, yeah, in our training or teaching, it's not Dhamma, I think. Yeah, we are not doing something for the sake of benefits or gaining, for the total renunciation, 100% detachment. Yeah.
But the knowledge you gain is benefit, right? Benefit is advantage. There are advantages in developing society.
In absolute sense, no advantage, no benefit. Total.
Because of no understanding from following any pattern at all, it has to be the Buddha's word which conditioned the understanding of whatever appears, which is unknown from life to life. Like seeing is not self, it's conditioned. It arises and falls away instantly from nothing to see and then nothing again. Each reality is that. But they're all unknown until one hears the teachings of the Buddhas which talk about the truth of each moment. To understand that actually each reality which appears is conditioned. No one can make it arise at all.
Coming back to your question, yeah, your statement, yeah, understanding is scary. Mean that if we take everything for non-self, yeah, it's scary. But the statement I like, yeah, of Kunsuchin, is everything is thought, everything is element, yeah, everything is element, yeah, and it's a very strong statement. It's scary, but just. Element.
Actually, it's what the Buddha taught, that everything is element. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a very scary statement, but it's true, 100%.
Why is it scary?
It's just element, not nothing.
Just elements, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only because of attachment that it seems scary.
It's to self that it's scary. It's not to Panya.
I mean, it is says the statement to the Taro. When the Taro asked a question about the Panchatawan Viti, I would like to say that if you think about the Aramanapachaya, in the Panchatawan Viti is the Paramatta Dhamma. It's a rupa. It's a real. It's not a concept. That's why in the Panchatawan Viti is the Paramatta Aramana. It means the rupa. Rupa is a Paramatta Dhamma.
And now can you explain to these two who don't know any of the words, can you explain what you're talking about? Because it just sounds, it doesn't mean anything. Can you give them a simple explanation, please?
I try to tell the statement to the Tadao that they talk about the Panchatawan Viti and the further Panchatawan Viti and
No, use a conventional code, easier term, not Pali terms.
No, in the Panchatawan Viti is the Aramana.
It's English
one. Sense door.
It's five sense door. Five sense door is mean that the Aramana is the Paramatta. It's either Tatu. Either Tatu. It's a Rupa. It's a Rupa. It's not a concept. But I'm not.
Object. Object, not Aramana. Object.
Object is a Rupa, yeah. It's not a concept.
Yeah.
It's not a concept
it's
yet.
It's not a concept.
Yeah.
In the five sense stone.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are the five sense stones?
The five sense stone is Shakupasata, Sotapasata.
Ears.
Okay, try again.
I would like to participate and
like
talk to the Tadao.
You could start talking in Cantonese. And
yeah, exactly.
Tadao could start speaking in Germanese.
Another thing that I would like to statement to the Tambush about the lining that you talk about, the what when you're seeing, right? When you're seeing, it means the visible object impinged in the eye base or Chatupasata.
Okay.
That is conditioned chakku vinyana. It means by kamma pachaya.
I'm sorry about that. Another thing.
That when they talk about the shifu, I think about that. I'd like to say to the Taoist, give you understand the state somposhom. No, sorry. Piti somposhom, not state somposhom. That you understand that what the meaning of the shifu.
Well, it's apparent his daily life language and our daily life language is different.
It's a skill to express oneself in a language that others can understand, and this is kind of consideration.
Hollandish.
Yeah, they could start having a German conversation.
Yeah. Well, Gabi and I were talking how difficult to explain the Dhamma in your own language. Then we go to English. English is easier for us. But sometimes we have to explain in Dutch and in German. And we use some translations, but it sounds so awkward, so strange. Nicht geläufig, yeah, not common language. So we talked about our troubles yesterday.
What Kunnopadon is expecting is that everyone at least knows Pali.
But he knows that there are people who are newcomers who don't know any Pali terms, so out of metta and kindness, then we try to use words that can be understood easily, and it's a good test of one's own understanding, because if one cannot put that understanding in simple words, then it's of no value at all.
And you'll be training in English.
When we went to Vietnam a few years ago, the first trip, for almost the whole stay, we didn't use any Pali terms, maybe one or two. And when we have our discussions in Australia, we don't use any Pali terms because people just find it off-putting. So the aim is to help people listen and consider, not to impress with our knowledge or something like this.
And Gabby,
any points you'd like to bring up or any?
We had one conversation when we first met you about the environment. Many people have concerns about environmental issues, for example, the amount of pesticides that's used or climate warming or the kind of drugs that are used in hospitals, all these things. And we were talking about how the only problem actually is the thinking at this moment, the thinking with akusala. And if there's no thinking of akusala, no problem, no issue. But it doesn't mean one cannot think about or have ideas because this is daily life as well.
Are all realities right now be known? Right now? Are they known?
No.
So what Buddha taught us is just to know what is here and now instead of trying to have something which hasn't arisen yet and try to have it. But that which is there here and now should be known, because it's covered up from eons and eons ago until the Buddha taught us.
And all problems arises because there's no knowing. There's so much ignorance. So the only cure is to understand.
That's why having clear understanding of one word at a time is very important.
So to clarify, when we're thinking about the environment or things like that, or how good Donald Trump is, we're all kind of moving away from the reality of the present moment, which is the most important.
Yeah. That's why I understand each reality at a time, like thinking, it's not seeing. And it's conditioned by previous accumulation. Nothing and then something and then nothing should be kept in the mind.
So when we think, we tend to be absorbed in the object of thinking, but it's more important to begin to understand that thinking as a conditioned moment. That's to get away, we're coming out of the being absorbed in the object.
The problem is the ignorance and attachment. The absorb, what you refer to absorb is because ignorance and attachment has arisen. So it's ultimately to seeing the danger of ignorance and attachment.
And to understand intellectually it's not enough, because the truth can be directly attained to understand its truth.
But one must have intellectual understanding before there can be direct understanding. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, one will easily be led into the idea of a self doing something to have more understanding.
If there is no understanding of awareness or some sati, it's impossible to try to have it.
It's impossible, I think.
To try to have it arise. Try to have some sati right now. Impossible. Is it possible? So it depends on understanding the anatta-ness of all dhammas.
Yes.
There can be trying, but it's wrong and it won't bring awareness.
Or subtle trying.
Any kind of trying.
Yeah.
Can never bring awareness.
And only right understanding can understand that it's wrong.
What Nina is saying is that while we are talking about the trying of so-called meditators who make a plan to go somewhere and focus on some object, there's also the trying that can happen with
those who don't meditate, like trying to catch realities, trying to understand. And you know.
Be aware now.
Or what about now?
Yeah. Be aware now. It can slip in. It can slip in. We talked the other day about awareness can slip in, because we can take it the wrong way or the right way. So if you take it the right way, you know, it's only by conditions. But the wrong way, you expect something. So anything can be taken the right or the wrong way. So be so careful to write or to explain to others.
Well, that's why there has to be so much careful considering and reflecting and understanding of Dharma's asanatha. Otherwise, no matter one says, be aware now or understand reality, it can be taken the wrong way because of attachment and the idea of self and expectations, trying to pinpoint, trying to know it. So the problem is not the words, but the misunderstanding and the attachment, especially the attachment to the idea of self.
Yes.
So however the words are put, it can be, there can be misunderstanding because of that accumulated tendency and accumulated memory.
Until there is more confidence on anattaness.